now continue the League of Women Voters of St. Lucie County Candidate Forum. The Treasure Coast is part of a newly created congressional district, District 18. It takes in St. Lucie, Martin, and Northern Palm Beach counties. We welcome the candidates today, Patrick Murphy, Marilyn Davis Holloman, and Alan West. We'll start with a one-minute introduction. Patrick Murphy.
Okay. Thank you all, first of all, for being here today. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for hosting this. Based on the crowd, looks like there's some big races going on. My name is Patrick Murphy, and I'm running for Congress in the 18th District because I believe we need someone that's going to put job creation first, someone that's going to fight for our seniors, and someone that's going to bring an end to the divisiveness and bickering that's killing Congress right now. I also believe that my background in the private sector is exactly what we need to get our country back on the right track. I spent several years as a certified public accountant working for Deloitte & Touche, one of the largest accounting firms in the world, going into numerous Fortune 500 companies, looking for inefficiencies, waste, and fraud. That's some experience I think we need in our country right now. After Deloitte, I started a small environmental company. Spent about 6 months in the Gulf of Mexico cleaning up after the BP oil spill. It was really through these experiences that opened my eyes to government's involvement in our business lives. And I believe we need some serious changes and some people that are going to be serious about solutions and doing what's best for everybody. I look forward to answering everyone's questions today, and thank you again.
Okay, opening statement from Marilyn Davis Holloman.
Yes, good afternoon, Carol. This is the second time I've had the privilege to participate in a forum by the League of Women Voters, and I appreciate their pioneering work on behalf of all citizens to familiarize us with the voting process and our responsibilities and our communities. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I'm a graduate of the University of Miami. I've worked 40 years on behalf of families and children, working here today to help represent them in Congress. I see so many obstructive, divisive behaviors that are not contributing to the benefit of our communities locally. I have an obligation to represent us and what's really happening at home. This race is about breakfast, lunch, and dinner for our families, and not about ego stroking or patronizing, politicizing. And I am a Democrat. I am the write-in candidate for District 18.
Okay, opening introduction, Alan West.
I'm Representative Lieutenant Colonel Retired Alan West. I served 22 years honorably in the United States Army. I currently sit on the Armed Services Committee and also the Small Business Committee. When you talk about going in and finding fraud, waste, and abuse, you're looking at a person that found three wasteful programs in the Department of Defense budget within the first 3 months of being there, first time ever in politics, and it passed on the House floor 393-0. When Dennis Kucinich looked for someone to stand with him against the violation of the War Powers Act and our intervention in Libya, he came across the aisle and he asked me to stand with him, and I did, and I stood against the Speaker of the House. When our Florida colleague, Corinne Scott Brown, wanted to have a gold medal presented to the Montford Point Marines, the first African-American Marines, she came across the aisle to me. And if you want, go to C-SPAN and you can see where we awarded that gold medal to those men who were the first black Marines. So I have stood, I stand on principle, and I work with anyone that stands on principle to make sure we have a better America to pass to our children and grandchildren. And I look forward to your questions.
Okay, thank you. We're going to rotate the first shot at each question. So we'll begin with Marilyn Holloman. What do you see as the greatest national security threat to the United States?
National security threat? I think probably the breach of our sovereignty. It concerns me in many areas. I can see it economically. We see it militarily. There are so many questions about the policies that have been in place the last 10 or 12 years and whether they have enhanced our security or actually brought to question how we would defend our sovereignty if we were aggressively pursued.
Okay. Mr. West?
Well, it's very simple. When you remember the words of the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, who said that our national debt is our number one threat to our overall security. When you consider the fact that we are $16 trillion in debt, when you consider the fact that the federal government right now is taking up spending about 25% of our gross domestic product, this is something where we have seen the past 4 years of trillion-dollar-plus deficits. It is the spending that is emanating out of Washington, D.C. It's a lack of fiscal discipline. We are passing budgets in the House. For whatever reason, they're not passing budgets in the Senate. We're passing appropriations bills in the House, and for whatever reason, they're not passing them in the Senate. So if we do not have a fiscal roadmap, our economic security, which also entails your national security, because we have this thing looming over us called sequestration, which will take our United States military down to World War II and World War I levels, at a time when I think all of us realize that right now the world is a more volatile and a more dangerous place. So without a doubt, our debt is the greatest threat to our national security and our overall security.
Mr. Murdoch.
Yes, thank you. Certainly the long-term debt of our country is perhaps the biggest problem we're facing, but it's a long-term problem, and it's a problem that's going to take a lot of work, and we need a long-term view to bring it down. We need people that are serious about solving these problems, and in my opinion, the best way to bring down that long-term debt is by getting more people back to work. It's going to take a three-step process. Number one is economic growth. We need more people working. We need more people in the workforce, more businesses creating jobs, whether entrepreneurs, small businesses, big businesses of any size. We need growth. Number two, we need to cut the spending. There are way too many programs in our government that overlap, that are duplicative, that we need to eliminate. GAO recently had a study that had 32 different government organizations that do almost the same thing. This is hundreds of billions of dollars of waste. We also need to go after waste and fraud, things like Medicare. We've already began to crack down on it. We need to continue that. We also need to look at revenue. If we're going to be serious about our long-term debt, we've got to look at the revenue side of things. And I would support going back to the Clinton-era tax rates for millionaires and billionaires. But it's not just the personal side of tax rates we need to look at, it's the corporate side of tax rates. And being a CPA, I've studied the tax code, and I've seen the loopholes, the deductions, and I know it needs to be changed. I look forward to working across the aisle solving those problems.
Okay, we'll go first with the next question to Mr. West. What is your opinion on what's come to be known as the Ryan Plan?
Well, I think that when you look at where we're heading, the trustees and actuaries of Medicare and Social Security is saying that Medicare is going to be bankrupt in 2024. Social Security after that, 2033. So to sit around and do nothing means that we were going to destroy those promises that we made to our seniors right now. So to come up with a plan that says in the future, we have no effect upon the current seniors right now, but for myself, 51 years of age, I get an option. I get an option of going into a traditional Medicare, or I get the option of going into a premium support plan, which as my opponent brought up, Bill Clinton, and I'm glad to see he's speaking like a conservative here today. You know, Bill Clinton came up with the premium support plan, and I think that that's a great way to go forward. It is indexed to income. It's based upon a competitive bidding process, which is exactly what our government employees have right now, to make sure that we provide the right type of benefit to our seniors. And also, for those that are high income, you won't get that same amount of benefit. So we must do something. Social Security, we cannot continue to go down the path of payroll tax cuts, which means you're really actually defunding Social Security. We got to get people back to work. That's absolutely right. And when you talk about tax and regulatory policies, the federal government does not have the right plan. If we raise the taxes on those top two brackets by 4 to 5%, those are the subchapter S's, those are the LLCs, those are the small business owners. And when you look all across Fort Pierce, you see all of these closed storefronts. An important part of getting Social Security back solvent and strong again is getting Americans back to work. But we got to have the right tax and regulatory policies to do that.
Mr. Murphy.
Do you mind repeating the question?
What is your opinion on what's come to be known as the Ryan Plan?
Yes, well, first of all, there's no question that Medicare is perhaps one of the biggest problems facing our country. But thanks to the Affordable Care Act, we have now added a minimum of 8 years of life to Medicare. They have gone after waste and fraud, and they reduced the amount of overpayments to insurance companies. We need to continue down this path. I also believe we need to allow the government to begin negotiating with the big pharma companies, just like the VA does to much success right now. My opponent, Alan West, voted for the Ryan Plan twice and said it would be suicide to oppose. The Ryan Plan ends Medicare as we know it. It turns it into a voucher program. I do not believe that is the right step forward. I believe there are tweaks that can be made to both Social Security and Medicare to ensure that they're there for generations to come. And when you talk about Social Security can pay 100% of its benefits for the next 22 years. So it's on more stable footing than Medicare. And there are, of course, some tweaks that can be made. Right now, individuals are taxed on Social Security until they make $110,000 of income. I would propose raising the cap on Social Security. currently, if you make, say, $1 million, you're only paying about 10% of your tax into Social Security. But if you're making $40,000 a year, you pay 100% into Social Security. So it's more of a question of fairness, and there are some easy fixes to ensure that Social Security and Medicare are here for generations to come.
Ms. Holloman, your opinion of the Ryan Plan?
My opinion of the Ryan Plan is basically these plans that were promulgated that feed off of the existing Social Security and Medicare system are not valid. If they truly had America's interest at heart and they were for the free market system, they would create something totally outside of that and leave Medicare and Social Security as it is. As we create jobs in our communities and restore our industries, people will, the youth and us will be paying into the Social Security and Medicare systems, and there will be no threat. I think that they use that as a point of intimidation to make people feel that they must somehow validate one system or the other. It's a free market system. Go create something else and leave us alone.
Okay. We move from one plan to the next. Let's start with Mr. Murphy. What is your view on what has come to be known as Obamacare?
Yes. We got to look at where we started. Healthcare costs in our country have been spiraling out of control. It takes about 18% of our GDP, yet we rank somewhere in the mid-30s when it comes to healthcare. So we needed major changes. Now, the theory behind Obamacare came out of a Republican think tank. It was promoted by Newt Gingrich. It was then implemented by Mitt Romney and then passed by John Roberts at the Supreme Court. So there are some good credentials behind the thinking here. And what Obamacare has done is ensured that young adults can stay on their parents' healthcare plan until they're 26 years old. It's closed the donut hole for our seniors. It's ensured that if you have a pre-existing condition, you won't be denied coverage with your insurance policy. If you get sick, your insurance company can no longer drop you from their plan. There's no more lifetime caps. And a part that I especially like are the state exchanges that are created now. There's more openness, there's more transparency that in each state, whether you're a business or an individual, you can go buy your insurance and see what exactly the plan offers. This will create more competition and help to bring down costs. Long term, it's all about costs. It's all about preventative treatments, getting people treated earlier. And that's a big part of Obamacare. That's a big part of the Affordable Care Act, is making sure people can go to the doctor, get their annual checkups, and identify diseases, whatever it is, diabetes, early on to make sure they prevent it from becoming a much bigger problem. So, no piece of legislation that comes out of Washington, D.C. is perfect. We need to focus on improving healthcare reform, and that should be the focus, not simply repealing it. Fortunately, my opponent, Alan West, has had 33 votes to simply repeal Obamacare, not a single one of how to improve it, how to improve it for future Americans. I think that's where the focus needs to be.
Okay, Ms. Holloman, your view on Obamacare?
The Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. I think that it should be allowed. We need to collect the data on how we're implementing it as of yet. And I've been a healthcare provider for over 40 years, family nurse practitioner for over 30. There are so many aspects to healthcare in America. And so many people have an economic stake in it. I see the Affordable Care Act as one approach that has given the broadest amount of people the greatest amount of access. And we need to be able to look at it for a year or two and make revisions as necessary and stop politicizing it. This is about human lives.
Mr. West,
you have to be very concerned about the Affordable Care Act, because just this Monday, as it is the law of the land, now seniors who return back to a hospital within a 30-day time period, the hospital will be fined. I don't think that's something that our dear friends over in Longwood would be very happy about, and I don't think our seniors will be happy to know that coming back to a hospital for a visit, not related to anything previous, but within 30 days, you will be fined. When I talked to the healthcare underwriters just yesterday in Palm Beach, they're very concerned about a thing called the medical loss ratio, which means that all of a sudden our independent insurance agents are being driven out of business, which is why you see 15 to 16% increase of insurance premiums, basically thanks to the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act really does end up being a tax law. There are 20 new taxes that are part of the Affordable Care Act, and now, as you say, thanks to Chief Justice Roberts, the thing that the President said was not an individual mandate tax is indeed an individual mandate tax, which has given the Congress an incredible amount of tax and authority over the American people. There are medical device taxes in there. There are taxes on health savings accounts and flexible spending accounts. Capital gains taxes, dividends taxes are all being increased because of the Affordable Care Act. You look and see that all of a sudden you have tanning taxes. This is an insidious tax bill that is being put on the American people. I agree with the provisions that you just talked about. But Patrick, back in 2010, I read that entire 2,700 pages. And I will tell you the 2,680 pages need to go because that creates 159. It's 159 new government agencies and bureaucracies, and yes, we are robbing Medicare to pay for the Affordable Care Act. $517 billion to Part A, $247 billion in cuts to Part B. Talk to the Treasure Coast Hospice, which is about to receive a $5 million cut from the CMS due to the Affordable Care Act.
Can I respond?
We're going to move on to the next question here, and we'll start with Ms. Holloman. If elected, what is your plan to stimulate business growth United States?
Locally, we need some free enterprise zones, and we need the small business incubators that were effective in other areas of the state and in other states to be comprised of minority business enterprise. There is no effective minority business development in this community. It's very difficult as a minority female to get a business going and to maintain it here. And because, one, the economy is very poor and people don't have access to services to put their businesses in place and maintain them, and that they're not undercapitalized. Nationally, I haven't taken a look at that because, of course, I don't have access to all of that data, but I think definitely we need to revise NAFTA on a global international level, and especially here at home, because NAFTA, some of the provisions in NAFTA have actually impeded the sovereignty of our own nation economically.
Well, sitting on the Small Business Committee, I get the opportunity of seeing and hearing many small business owners come before us and talk about the onerous tax policy and the regulatory environment. In calendar year 2011, the administration issued over 71,000 pages of new regulations. You can talk to many of the people right here in Fort Pierce what that's doing to them. First of all, we have to stabilize and give some certainty in our tax system. Right now, we have six different tax brackets. If you're talking about raising taxes on just those top two brackets, the 33 goes to 37, the 35 goes to 39.6, that's going to destroy small business growth. As a matter of fact, Ernst & Young, through the National Federation of Independent Businesses, said that will affect 2.1 million small business owners in the United States of America and create almost 715,000 jobs being lost. And we just saw what happened with digital domain here. We've got to stabilize and provide certainty through our tax code. I think that we need to move away from the current tax system that we have to more of a flat tax. Everywhere you look across the globe, flat tax systems have been very successful. We don't need to look at the increases on capital gains tax. Seniors are going to see dividends tax going from 15% to 43.4%. That's going to affect economic growth. We have to look at some simple things. You talk about the airport right here in St. Lucie County. We had a hearing in the Small Business Committee where the administration wants to increase aviation user fees on takeoff and landings by $100 instead of keeping it on the gas tax. That's the type of insidious nature that is coming down that is affecting our small businesses to be able to grow, which is the 85% lifeblood. As well, we have to look at Dodd-Frank and the adverse effects Dodd-Frank is having upon our small community banks, which right here in St. Lucie County, you only have two small community banks left. That's reprehensible.
Mr. Murphy, if elected, your plan to stimulate business growth?
Yes. First of all, we need to start by focusing on building roads, bridges, and schools right here at home, not halfway around the world. We're spending billions of dollars a week in Iraq and Afghanistan. We need to bring those resources back home.
We're out of Iraq.
Still spending money there. So we're not spending money there? So we need to bring those resources home and focus them right here in our own backyard. We need to expand lending to businesses of all sizes. We also need to create a vision in our country. Unfortunately, we have no stability in our government. That, to me, is one of the biggest things holding us back. There isn't a climate conducive for job growth.
We need a vision, and we need a tax code that's predictable, that we can lay it out for the next 10 years so businesses of all sizes and entrepreneurs can plan accordingly. We need a regulatory environment that's not too burdensome, that doesn't hold back innovation, and especially the small businesses. And there's such a big difference now between small businesses and large businesses, especially when it comes to regulations. And I've seen it firsthand. I know what needs to be eliminated and what needs to be streamlined. Also, we need to come up with an energy policy and a currency policy that's stable, so businesses have some foresight and know where they can grow. I believe locally there's some opportunities as well. I believe the port right here in Fort Pierce needs to be looked at. We need a new master plan, and it's an opportunity to create commerce right here in our backyard. The Panama Canal is opening up, and there are some opportunities that we should be taking advantage of. I also believe the Research Coast is something that we also should be expanding, and this is an opportunity for good-paying, high-quality, long-term jobs right here in our backyard, and we need to continue encouraging more of that kind of growth right here in our backyard.
Okay, next question. We'll start with Mr. West. What is your position on women's access to abortion? Would you leave the laws as they are now, or would you support abortion if ever when?
Well, I've been married for 23 years, and I have two daughters, 19 and 15, and this is our position as a family. We don't believe in abortion as a means of birth control. We believe in the three exemptions for rape, incest, and also for the health of the mother. I don't support partial birth abortion. I don't think that it is part of our values to go in and dismember children within the mother's womb. And furthermore, I don't believe with President Obama when he says that any child that survives an abortion still deserves to die. I think that is heinous. I think that's infanticide. What I do believe in is very simple. Well, go check the record. What I do believe in is this. The federal government should be a better steward of its taxpayer dollars. And the taxpayer dollars should not be going to agencies or providers of abortion services. If people want to choose to do that, they should be able to do that on their own. We have $16 trillion in debt. We've got to make sure that we are taking care of the dollars that you send to Washington, D.C. And that's my stance on abortion, and I think that that's a very reasonable stance.
Yeah. This is certainly an area that there's quite a difference between my opponent and myself. Whether it's his quotes or whether it's his votes, there's a big difference. Recently, he said that Planned Parenthood women are neutering American men and bringing this country to the point of incredible weakness.
I didn't say Planned Parenthood women, so
I do not support that view, and I do not support that statement. Beyond that, it's his votes as well. He has supported to defund preventative treatments for women, such as mammograms. I don't think we should be doing that. I think they need more funding for preventative treatments. He co-sponsored the Aiken Bill. This redefines rape. I do not think we need to be redefining rape right now. He also says, when talking about abortion, that he has some exemptions for it. Well, unfortunately, he supports the Personhood Amendment. Under the Personhood Amendment, there are zero exemptions, no matter what. I do not believe the government should be making decisions for a woman, and I fully support a woman's right to choose.
Yes, I'm a family nurse practitioner, and I've been a nurse my entire life, since I was 18. We have a schizophrenia in our country that has embedded itself in the last 50 years, and socially we're all becoming victims of it. I am tired of the pro-life, pro-choice stance. Quite frankly, I think a man developed the term. And he stepped back, and we've been fighting over it for 50 years. 100 years ago, women in this country had very little choice in their lives. And one of the biggest indicators of poverty, as you know, is the number of children that he can't feed, that a man won't feed. Women have become, and women at that age were practically driven to craziness, to the extent of wanting to destroy the life within them to preserve the life they had and the one and their own children. We have advanced beyond that in the last 100 years. I think we need to get to the point where the issue about that is accountability, male-female accountability. You can't tell me as a nurse that you can't define what a life is. It's ridiculous. We're trying to make laws that cover our own, that are convenient for us. And they're making us crazy, quite frankly. Yeah, what is it in there? Is it a cat? Is it a dog? Could it be a horse? It's a child. It's a life. That's not where the battle needs to be. We need to move it to where the social aspect is male-female accountability.
Yay.
And that abortion is something that is reserved for something very extreme, instead of using the extreme to define the standard. I tell you again, the guys did it.
Mr. Murphy. Many policymakers say energy and sustainability are major problems facing the U.S. this century. What policies would you support to meet the demand for energy while ensuring an economically and environmentally sustainable future?
Yes, well, energy, again, is a long-term plan. I believe we need to increase domestic production of fossil fuels where it exists already, though, not off our shores and certainly not in the Everglades. We need to do it where it already exists. I spent 6 months, as I said, cleaning up the BP oil spill. I know the damage it can cause firsthand, but I do believe there's a balance that can be had between drilling and the environment. But really, what we should be talking about is the long-term solution here and the movement toward green energy, whether it's windmills, whether it's biomass, whether it's thermal, whether it's tidal, solar, you name it. There are so many opportunities out there. And I don't believe it's government's role to pick winners and losers. I believe we need goals for getting off fossil fuels. And it's a long-term view, but it's realistic. So again, long-term view, movement toward green energy.
Okay, Ms. Holman?
I'm sorry. Please repeat the question.
It's a long one. Say, policymakers say energy and sustainability are major problems facing us this century. What policies would you support to meet the demand for energy while ensuring economically and environmentally sustainable future?
It is a long one. The ecosystem, of course, without an ecosystem, we're not here. So I do support efforts, that validate or acknowledge the role it plays in our energy. But I think most of our energy issues are we need to produce our own energy in this country, and as much as possible, and to maintain the sovereignty of our own country. Otherwise, we fall victim to the price variations and the instability of the markets that are international. So I do believe that we should support our own sustainability and what are the different methods that are available.
Mr. West, energy and sustainability.
Energy security is part of our economic security and also part of our national security. We cannot continue to send taxpayer dollars to countries that would funnel that money over to people that would want to see us harm, being in Saudi Arabia, being in Venezuela. We need to have a full spectrum development of our energy resources. I remember as a young kid back in the 70s sitting in my dad's car during the Saudi oil crisis and having to fill up that tank of gas on the even odd days based upon your license plate. I'm tired of hearing it's a long-term solution. We're the United States of America. We have these energy resources here. We have people that are developing these resources on state and private lands. We have a federal government that is not allowing these permits. We see the Keystone XL pipeline is a great example. You look at North Dakota with the Bakken oil fields. North Dakota has less than 3% unemployment, and kids are coming out of high school getting high-paying, five-figure income jobs. If we're not careful, you already have Scarab A09, which is a Chinese-built oil rig that was leased out to a Spanish company called Repsol that the Cubans have allowed to drill right near our coast. And with slant drilling, that means you can go 40 miles underwater, and you can go right into our outer continental shelf. If someone is going to do that, think about if we would take of the natural gas resources we have off this coast, the second and third order small businesses and job growth and technologies we could bring right here to this research coast. Every single vehicle in the United States of America, mass transit vehicle, can be on natural gas. It's time we stop talking about what we cannot do and start getting to the business of what we can do. And when you look at the EPA and the war on coal that is affecting one of the greatest resources that we have here, 46% of the coal industry is about to go belly up. And not too far away from here, down in Mount Martin County, you have a coal generation plant that supplies energy to about 300,000 homes. We don't need to see energy costs go up. It's time for full spectrum development of our energy resources we have right here in the United States of America, down to the renewables, but we cannot use government taxpayer money to funnel it just to renewables.
Thank you. Next question, Charles McMullen. Many voters feel politics has divided us. to the point that meaningful legislation is just not being passed. If elected, what would you do to get both sides to work together for the people and not just for the party?
I don't know if anybody else here is in the room is here. I was a bused kid in New York City. And if you were bused during the 60s, you understand the racial division and economic divisions that were there. I was educated in the midst of that mumble jumble. I'm used to, as a family nurse practitioner and as a community development person, working across the line with people with diverse interests and alliances. I personally have always wanted to work together to make sure that what was settled on or evolved was in the best interest of the majority, with also an interest in, as a parliamentarian, of course, letting the voices of the small people be heard too.
Let us move on to the same question, Mr. West.
I sit on two very bipartisan committees. That's the Armed Services Committee, which is focused on the national security of the United States of America, and also the Small Business Committee. The thing is this, it has to be principle-based. When you look at the United States of America, we're heading down a terrible fiscal path. If you don't recognize the fact that we just downgraded our GDP growth to 1.3%, the policies that we see emanating out of this administration, and the fact that we are passing budgets, we're passing legislation, we're passing almost 37 pieces of legislation out of the House of Representatives, bipartisan, that talks about regulatory reform, tax reform, job creation, policy legislation, and it's not being taken up in the Senate. So I think that when you look at the House of Representatives, we are working together to get some of these things done, as opposed to the Affordable Care Act, which did not get one single vote from the other side of the aisle, and now we're starting to see it unravel. So this has to be a principle-based issue and discussion about where we want to make sure that the United States of America goes for the future of our children and grandchildren. And I think it's so important. That's where we start. Not just sitting saying that we have to go along and get along just because. The most important thing is, what are we doing to make sure that the future is bright for the small business owners, the future is bright for our energy security, the future is bright for our national security. Every single person should be well understanding about the effects of sequestration, and no one should be standing in the path of that. I'm very concerned when I hear people from the other side of the aisle saying that they're more than willing to take the United States of America off a fiscal cliff if they cannot get taxes raised. That is not a good position to take for our country.
Mr. Murphy, working together.
One of the biggest reasons I left the private sector was because I was tired of the bickering and the partisanship in politics right now. Fact is, I used to be a Republican, but I got so tired of the extremism of the Tea Party that I decided not only did I want to do something about it. No extremism, right? Look, it's the extremism of people like my opponent, Alan West, calling people communists, comparing them to Nazis, Marxists.
We have to let our candidates speak, and thank you.
That's the beauty. I don't need to spend anything when it comes to my opponent. Calling a colleague vile, despicable, and not a lady is no way to move this country forward. If we're going to be serious about these problems that we face, we've gone through quite a few of them today, we're going to have to reach across the aisle. We're going to have to find compromise and do what's best for everybody, for all Americans. When you're wasting time calling people names, making false accusations, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. So, look, we've got to do what's best for everybody. We've got to get over the partisanship in this country and see how we can help the people of the Treasure Coast, this state, and this country. Thank you.
Okay, final question, when it goes on, start with Mr. West. What would you do to help veterans in this country?
Well, when you look at the fact that I am a veteran, when you look at the fact that my father was a veteran from World War II, my older brother was a veteran from Vietnam, and my nephew has already served two tours of duty. Just last week, we had a Hiring Our Heroes jobs fair down in West Palm Beach, and that's one of the critical things that we can do, get with the United States Chamber of Commerce. We also brought down the chairman of the Veterans Administrations Committee. We went over to the VA hospital to talk about how we could improve some of the situations we see there as far as the appeals process, the medical records process, to make sure we're servicing our veterans. The most important thing is that we should not have homeless and jobless veterans in the United States of America, and definitely not have them down here, and that's my commitment. One of the things I was very upset with the administration about, because I do sit on the subcommittee for military personnel of the Armed Services Committee, was when the administration wanted to triple
TRICARE healthcare fees. That is breaking a promise that we made to the men and women who were ready to give that last full measure of devotion to this country. Once upon a time, we said if you served a full career in the military, you would receive good quality health care free of charge for you and your spouse. We backed off from that. We've gone to a TRICARE system, which I understand we can provide our payment to, but now we're talking about tripling. We also had an administration said our wounded warriors need to go on private health insurance. And if you recall, the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars stood against the president on that. We need to have veterans that are serving up in Washington, D.C., to make sure that our veterans that are here are protected and taken care of, especially those young men and women that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with these incredible injuries. So that's what I will continue to do for the veterans, protecting their health care, providing job opportunities for them.
Mr. Murphy, what do you do for veterans?
Our veterans are our heroes. We need to do everything we can to make sure that when they come home, they have opportunities for a house, opportunities for jobs, opportunities to get their life back on track. And unfortunately, whether it's the Ryan plan or 11 other votes that my opponent took, he hurts veterans. He's removed opportunities for housing, for jobs. So we have to do everything we can. They need more opportunities for loans, for grants, for education, you name it. We have to do everything we can for our veterans and make sure that they come back and hit the ground running.
Ms. Holloman, veterans.
Yes, when our veterans came home from World War II, they had a chicken in every pot. They had legislation to help them go back to school. We have to stop talking, and our mandate should be funded for the support of our veterans that come back. People in my family are also veterans and have given themselves during World War II. We need to put our money where our mouth is and fund the mandates to support veterans and their families and education and rehabilitation. A lot of these guys are coming back home missing limbs and with traumatic brain injuries that are quite devastating economically and psychologically to their families and to our communities. I'm not so sure I agree that they should be put in places of the militia at home. I think they need to rest their brain, and we need to reintegrate them into other aspects of our economy so that they can enjoy some of the fruits of their labor and their commitment to us.
Thank you. We have finished the questions from the League of Women Voters. We now have 2 minutes each for a closing statement. I believe we first start with Mr. Murphy.
Okay. Again, thank you all for being here today. I appreciate your time and listening to us, and thank you for hosting this. As I said, we need someone that's serious about putting job creation first, someone that's going to protect the promise to our seniors, and someone that's going to bring an end to the divisiveness and bickering that's killing our country. Number one focus has to be jobs and the economy. We've got to look long-term to ensure that so many Americans have the same opportunities that we had. And this comes with the vision. This comes with creating stability in our government, working across the aisle. As I said, we need a stable tax code. We need to bring back regulations in certain circumstances to ensure that it's not too burdensome. We need stability in energy and currency prices. I also believe we need to protect our middle class, and some of the fundamental pillars of our society are things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. We need to ensure that they're there for generations to come. I'm going to do everything I can to make whatever changes need to be made, most likely they're going to be pretty minor, to ensure that they're there for generations. That is my promise to everybody. And there are tweaks that can be made to these programs. I also believe whatever the issue is, it comes down to bipartisanship. It comes down to reaching across the aisle, doing what's best for everybody. That is my promise to everyone here. I'm going to work my tail off in Washington, D.C. for everybody in this room, for 100% of this district. We not only need to get to work, we need to work together. Thank you.
Ms. Holloman?
Thank you for taking me as a walk-in for this race. I am the writing candidate because of funds. The booming cottage industry in America and this county in particular, every 4 years should not be lobbyists and political consultants. We need jobs for every person in every socioeconomic level here. I'm very disheartened by the amount of money that these candidates have used for their campaigns. I could have used that money for program services for families in this area that are starving. And I particularly have, I would like to see dramatic increases to program services and funding for families, and particularly minority families with children diagnosed with autism and related disorders. and others with disabilities in this community that are going without services, whose families are falling apart, trying to provide for their children, not only special, you know, meals and food and no speech therapy. My grandson was Baker-acted and thrown to the ground by the police and handcuffed and taken in a police car to New Horizons. That's not what it's there for. These kids are not criminals. They didn't assault their parents. They're agitated because they're lacking food, medicine, and appropriate therapies. Where is the intervention to save our children? They're not there to fill beds for funding for program services inappropriately used. The child has no speech therapy in 15 years. Now he's black and 180 pounds. Does that make him a criminal? His grandfather's an ambassador at the World Bank. Maybe he slugged his mom because he's hungry. Or actually, in his case, he had sores on his rectum. He needed medication for that. And Tylenol, not to be Baker-acted and shot up with Haldol to shut him up.
Ms. Hallman?
I want to thank League of Women Voters once again for hosting this and enabling me to be here. And I think that when you look at where we are in the United States of America, the fundamental principles that I believe in, that you can go back and see the Declaration of Independence through the Constitution, you can go back and research it through the Federalist Papers. It's about limited government that is fiscally responsible. It's about our individual sovereignty. It's about a free market system that enables us to have the greatest nation, the greatest economy that the world has ever known. It's about our strong national defense. And I think if anyone says that those are extremist positions, well, I guess you're just going to have to continue to call me extremist, because I will stand with the founding fathers on that. When I look at almost 37 pieces of legislation, bipartisan, passed in the House of Representatives, that's sitting on the desk of Harry Reid, that could do everything to unleash the economic might, the entrepreneurial spirit of the United States of America. That's my voting record, and that's what I will stand for. And that's what I will stand by, and I will continue to do that in returning to make sure that Fort Pierce can reach the level of expectations and opportunities they want. Every single person that I was listening to, county commission candidates, city commission candidates, mayoral candidates, talked about unleashing the economic spirit here in this city, in this county. The only way you're going to do that is to have someone that's running top cover for you at the federal government level. The only way you're going to do that is to have someone that has a relationship with the Corps of Engineers, that when we get that port facility going, when we want to have the right economic opportunity, the dredging will be there for you. When we look at the C-44 canal, so that we don't have this incredible race water runoff into our estuary systems, we're working with the Corps of Engineers on that. When you look at the Everglades Restoration Project, if we get a government that is fiscally responsible, we can make sure that we're funding those projects. That's what I will continue to do, is to serve you, not any special interest, not any family interest, and definitely not my own interest. So God bless you all, and thank you for having me.
For being here today, Patrick Murphy, Marilyn Davis-Holloman, and Alan West.
Thank you. Thank you.